Why not try doing it as a lion?
Sean laughed, and then stopped when he saw she was serious.
You're not kidding, are you?
He asked.
It works, trust me. I did it all through sixth grade because I wanted to get to my hybrid form before any of my friends.
I thought, being born alike and you got that automatically?
Nope. We have to work at it just like anyone else. We just get the advantage of having years to get used to our animal. Though it's no fun going through puberty as a lichen, trust me on that. What do you think of your father's suggestion that I drop out of college?
Roxy sighed.
Honestly, I don't know, hon. I guess it depends on how you do with learning the other stuff. You might be right about pursuing the alchemy thing, but then again, what do you want to do?
Sean shook his head.
I haven't even started to look at any of the spells or figure out what it takes to learn them. And the way the whole thing works is just weird. It's like an RPG. I'm supposed to put points into something I want to learn, and then I can learn it? What did Jolene say? You did ask her, right?
She said it's different for different types of magic users, which only makes sense.
She also said that magic users are stuck-up bigots and that they probably won't care much for a lichen who can do magic. Well, dear, we can cross that bridge and blow it up or burn it down when we come to it,
Roxy said with a smile.
Sean gave her another kiss. Well, I better get back to my room and let you study. Though, you know, we could save a bunch on rent if we shared a room,
he added with a wink.
You do have a point,
Roxy grinned and rubbed his head.
And your hair hides it so well.
Ha ha, Sean said and carefully got up,
and putting on his pants, he grabbed the rest of his clothes and his gift and went back to his room. He spent a few minutes going through everything in the box. The permit he stuck in his wallet for now. There was a leg holster, which would probably work with his hybrid form, if it was as big as Samson's had been. There was a shoulder holster that he could actually wear under some of his looser shirts and maybe even get away with it. He could wear a light vest, which would cover it easily. He usually wore one on the cooler days anyway. But he wasn't sure that he needed to start carrying a gun just yet. He'd never shot this one, and the last thing he wanted to do was miss what he was shooting at and hit someone else. Putting the trigger lock on it, he stashed it behind a few textbooks. He could play with it later. Then, putting the books he needed to study on his desk, he took off his pants and shifted.
That was easy, he thought to himself.
We are getting better at this. Perhaps that thing in your head helps,
was his lion's response.
I hope so. Well, let's study.
I'd rather go out and run around for a while.
I don't want Roxy mad at me, do you?
I'm sure we could.
No, just stop right there. She said this will help us, so we're doing it. As for running around, once it's late, real late, like after midnight.
Promise.
I like the idea too, you know, Sean admitted to himself. He just wondered if these conversations would continue or go away once he mastered this part of himself. He honestly had no idea what he preferred. Okay, let's get started. One thing Roxy hadn't told him, and which he should have guessed, turning pages with paws was hard. He'd also put more than one hole through a page and ripped one in half completely when he tried to use a claw. If nothing else, this was teaching him a whole lot about manual dexterity, and reading as a lion was a bit difficult as well. He found he was easily distracted and had a hard time remembering stuff at first. Part of that was because his lion found it all very boring, and so he had to constantly work to get him to pay attention. At least his lion wasn't resisting him at all. Otherwise, he probably wouldn't be able to do it. But it was definitely slow going. When Roxy showed up at 10 p.m. with a couple of pizzas, he quickly scarfed them down, and then, looking at him in his lion form, she suddenly shifted into her cheetah form.
Wow, I had no idea you were so small, Sean rumbled.
That's just 'cause you're so big, she replied in a higher pitched voice than he was used to hearing from her.
Am I really that big?
He asked, shaking his mane a bit. Roxy ducked her head in a nod. I've seen some were-tigers. They can be pretty big, too. But I've never seen a were-lion other than you, so I don't really have anything to compare it to.
I was thinking of going outside and running around for a bit after midnight. Interested?
Roxy shook her head. I'm going to bed here pretty soon. Unlike you, I didn't get to sleep in.
Jolene was here. What makes you think I got to sleep?
Sean laughed. Roxy whacked him in the nose with her tail and hopped up onto his bed and settled down. Sean got up on it much more carefully. He was afraid if he hopped on it, he'd break it, and just cuddled with her for a while. What? He asked as he suddenly woke up and found his lion feeling excited.
Let's go outside for a run.
Sean owed to himself and remembered he had pretty much promised. Besides, the idea sounded like fun to him. Carefully stepping off the bed so as not to wake Roxy, he made his way over to the window and looked down. Can we make that? He asked.
Easily.
And with that, his lion launched them out of the window and down to the ground. They hit front paws first, and then his butt came down and thumped as well, spreading the shock out. It stung a little bit, but he suddenly remembered that he regenerated because he was a werelion. Heck, he'd been shot, and he'd gotten over it so quickly that he'd completely forgotten about it until now. Let's be careful. Last thing we need is our picture in the paper. He felt his lion agree with that, and they spent about a half hour just prowling around the house. Then they leaped over the fence into one of the neighbor's yards, not one that had a dog, of course, and spent a few minutes examining that, then started to work his way toward San Rafael Park. This time of night, he figured it would be nice and empty, and he could run a bit and stretch out his muscles. Having to cross the campus made it a bit of a challenge, but that just added to the fun, he figured. Cutting around the north end of the stadium, he made it to the park without seeing anyone, or anyone seeing him. But on the way back, he ran into a problem. He had just crossed Sierra and was running by the back of some apartment complex when he heard someone exclaim,
"Jeff, come quick! I just saw a lion!"
Ducking into cover, Sean swore. He wasn't in the best place to hide, and someone from the hotel next door had their car lights on. It wasn't enough to show him clearly, but more than enough to give his outline if he moved.
"What are you going on about, Nancy?" he heard.
"A lion! I saw one, I'm sure it was. We better call the police."
"Nancy, put the phone down. With all the crap going on around here this weekend, I'm sure they don't need reports of a lion running around."
"I know what I saw, Jeff."
That was all that Sean needed, to have a bunch of cops running around. There was no way he'd be able to hide from them. Shifting back to human form, he just started to jog through the brush.
"Look, there it—"
"That's a man, Nancy. I told you there aren't any lions around here."
"Maybe he's being chased. I tell you, I saw a lion."
Sean cupped his hands around his mouth.
"Roar! I'm a lion!" he yelled.
There was a moment's silence, then the sound of someone sputtering, followed by a man laughing. Sean sighed and just hoped no one could see that he was naked. The last thing he needed was the police to be called for that. He quickly ran across the Carson-Reno Highway and onto campus. It was definitely a bit cold to be running around at night in the altogether. Backtracking the way he had come, he stopped for a minute and shifted back to his lion form, then padded off at a more sedate rate. Just as a car came screeching onto campus and headed for the place he'd stopped to change. "Well, that's curious," he thought.
"Let's check it out," his lion said.
"Sure." Ducking around the ticket booths, he leaped up onto the top of them and hunkered down behind the Wolfpack sign and peeked down through one of the cutouts to watch what happened. The car stopped.
"Which way?" he heard someone ask.
"I don't know, he disappeared," a second voice said.
"What do you mean he disappeared?" the first voice asked again.
"Just that. One moment the spell was telling me where he was, and the next, it isn't."
"What are you, a hedge wizard? Can't you find a freaking kid?"
"Something's interfering with the spell, I tell you. But he's around here somewhere, so why don't you get off your asses and go look?"
What if we run into those other guys? Hell, what if we run into the campus police?" a third voice spoke up.
"Then laugh and run away like a bunch of stupid college kids," the second one said again.
Curious, was all Sean could think.
"They are tracking us somehow. I do not like it."
"I'm open to suggestions," Sean replied, as all four doors opened and four men piled out of the car.
It was dark, but that didn't hamper Sean in the slightest. Three of them started over towards the stadium, splitting up to check the doors.
"Spread out. He's got to be around here somewhere,"
the one by the car, the second voice, said, and getting back in the passenger seat, sat down and closed the door.
"I'll tell you if he shows up again."
A running car with an open door, Sean thought. "Think we can sneak down there and steal it?"
"Just watch me,"
his lion chuckled, and standing up, he leapt off of the roof and ducked down under the bleachers, moving quickly. He shifted back for a moment, and Sean could clearly hear the guy in the car call,
"South! South! Under the bleachers!"
Sean shifted back then, and his lion went west, leaping over the low fence and dashing into the shadows. You'd think a huge 400-plus-pound lion would be clearly visible, even at night. But as they got near the parking lot, he hunkered down and quickly crept across the lot, approaching the car from behind, on the driver's side. He could hear the three others heading back to the car now, complaining to the guy in the car about how much he sucked. Coming up to the door, Sean shifted back, jumped into the seat, put the car in gear, then, grabbing the steering wheel with his left hand, he grabbed the guy in the right seat just as he started to yell, "He's here!" and slammed his head into the dashboard a couple of times until he stopped moving. As soon as he got off of campus, he turned left, turned the lights back on, and slowed down so as not to attract any attention. Then, when he got to McCarran, he went east, and after a few blocks, he turned down a small side street, and putting the car in park, he turned it off, and undoing the other man's seatbelt, he dragged him out of the car and quickly stripped him of his shirt, which he tore up and used one sleeve to blindfold him with. The man's face was pretty bloody. Sean could only guess that he'd broken his nose. The other sleeve he used to bind the man's hands behind him. Then he went through his pockets, relieving him of his wallet, his cell phone, and a key ring with some keys. He took off the two rings the man was wearing, as well as the strange-looking necklace, then went and searched the car. On the floor where he must have dropped it when Sean slammed his face into the dashboard was a rag with dried blood on it. Sniffing at it, Sean realized it was his blood, probably from the van.
"Before you became us," his lion pointed out.
"Good point," Sean murmured. The glove box didn't have anything beyond the registration, which Sean grabbed. The back seats just had some drink containers, but the trunk had a couple of road flares in it, which Sean also grabbed. By now the man was starting to groan, so Sean walked over to him. "Where is my mom?" Sean asked.
"What?"
the man gasped, his voice sounding different now. Sean wondered if he had broken more than just his nose.
"My mother. You killed my neighbor, and you kidnapped my mom. Where is she?"
Sean asked, and for good measure, he hauled off and kicked the guy in the side.
"I don't know where your mother is,"
the man gasped.
"Look, you tell me where she is, I let you live. You don't, you die,"
Sean growled, and kicked him again, harder.
"I swear,"
the man coughed.
"I swear to you that I don't know. We didn't kill him. That wasn't us."
"Oh? You're tracking me down, sending men after me. You have my blood from the van, and you want me to believe you're not involved?"
Sean kicked him again, and he was pretty sure he felt a rib break. The guy gasped in obvious pain.
"Please, please don't kill me. I'm just a tracking mage. I don't know what's going on. They don't tell me anything. All I know is they wanted us to get you before the Lithos did."
"The Lithos? Who the hell are they?"
I think there's some gang in Lithuania. I don't know. I'm just a hired helper. They said they had to get you first, but we weren't to kill you, just bring you in."
"How'd you get my blood?"
"I told them I needed something physical of yours, so we snuck into the impound lot, and I used a spell to gather up all of yours."
He was babbling now. Sean guessed that he really thought Sean was going to kill him.
"How did you hide from my spell?"
the guy asked him suddenly, as Sean tried to decide what to do with him.
"Trade secret," Sean told him. "Do you know why they want me?"
"No, no, I don't."
Sean prodded the spot where the broken rib was, making the man gasp in pain. "Want to reconsider that answer?" Sean asked. "I'm not a very patient man anymore, mister." Sean opened the wallet and looked at the license inside. "Mr. Smith?" "Damn, is that your real name?"
"Yes, it's my real name,"
he gasped.
"And I don't really know,
But I overheard someone saying something about they didn't want you finishing your father's work, that it was too dangerous.
Sean looked in the wallet. There was a fair bit of money there. He took half of it and memorized the man's name and address. Surprisingly, he lived in Sparks. Okay, Mr. Smith, here's the deal. You get to live today. Sean heard him exhale in relief. I'm relieving you of some of your cash as a fine for helping them. Do it again and, well, I'll kill you. Also, I know where you live now, so don't think I don't know how to find you. Oh, one other thing. Who the hell hired you?
I can't tell you that,
he protested. Oh, please, don't make me into a liar by forcing me to kill you. I want a name.
The Vestibulum. It was the Vestibulum.
Sean pondered that. It sounded like Latin. He'd have to look it up when he got home. Swear you'll never track me again.
I swear. I, Richard Smith, swear I will never track you, Sean Valens, again. Ever.
Good. This isn't your car, is it? Sean asked as he lit the first flare and tossed it into the front seat.
What? No! What's that sound?
I'm starting a fire. You might want to get to your feet and start walking away before the gas tank goes up, Sean said as he lit the second flare and tossed it in, followed by the third one. Oh, here's your wallet, Sean said, and picking the guy up, he stuck his rings, necklace, and wallet in his pocket and pointed him to the south. Better start walking. Sean tossed the third flare in, and then took off running before Mr. Smith could pull off his blindfold, putting the now merrily burning car between them. Sticking the bills in his mouth, he shifted again and loped off, heading home, making only a slight detour to hide the money on the roof of a bank by an ATM. Last thing he wanted was Smith trying to find Sean via the cash he'd stolen. Let him think he'd deposited it.
Where have you been?
Roxy asked, sitting on the bed with her tail curled around her as he pulled himself in through the window.
Having fun,
Sean purred and then shifted back.
Is that smoke I smell?
Yeah. Have you ever heard of a gang called the Lithos from Lithuania?
That's not a very original name,
Roxy chuckled and shifted back into human form as well. Sean shrugged.
That's what the guy I caught told me. Guy you caught?
Roxy asked, eyes wide.
Yep, was easy too.
Sean grinned, and coming over and sitting next to her on the bed, he told her about his encounter with Mr. Smith and the others working for the Vestibulum.
Vestibulum means static in Latin,
Roxy sighed.
I better call my dad, he'll know.
I think that can wait until morning, don't you? Sean grinned as he leaned in closer and started nibbling on the side of her neck. Roxy sighed, and slipping her hand into his lap, she started stroking him, not at all surprised to find him already excited.
Yeah, why ruin his sleep?
Roxy agreed, and let Sean pull her back down onto the bed. Sweet Tuesday morning. Jolene sighed and looked at the door. It said, Sawyer's Antiquities in faded green letters across the light gray metal door. Easy to miss if you weren't looking for it, but then the place was located in the back of an industrial park, so if you didn't know it was here, the odds of stumbling across it were slim. She didn't like dealing with Sawyer, but she made a point of stopping here every month because Sawyer kept an ear on the comings and goings of all things magical in Reno. Some of that was so he knew what opportunities there might be out there, but most of it was simple self-preservation. Sawyer dealt in rare and illicit items, most of which were stolen, and he was fencing. Squaring up her shoulders, she pushed the door open and stepped inside. As shops went, it looked like most pawn shops. There were rows of glass cases to either side of the room, as well as a center platform, which held larger items. There were no windows, but the lights kept it from being too dim.
Hi, Jolene.
Hello, Marks,
she said to the brutish-looking fat man sitting by the door. Jolene knew he only looked human. He wasn't. Sawyer wouldn't employ humans, ever. Marks was a werebore, and while he looked fat, Jolene knew he could move very quickly when he wanted to.
Well, if it isn't my favorite harlot, fresh off the sheets, no doubt, to grace my humble establishment.
Well, you're in a good mood today, Sawyer, Jolene said, taking her time as she strutted down the aisle towards the chest-high counter in the back. She didn't notice anything different in the displays, but she wasn't surprised by that. They rarely changed, as their primary purpose was camouflage for what really went on here.
Listen, Tart, I don't have time for you today. Can't you see I'm busy?
Sawyer waved his short arms around the empty store. Goblins weren't very tall. Sawyer stood all of 4 foot, and for a goblin, he was a tall one. He was bald, of course. Most goblins were, and he almost looked normal in his expensive dress shirt and fancy silk tie. But his skin was green, and his nose and ears were both a little too long and a little too pointed to be human. With a large hat and the proper skin color, Sawyer would simply be a short and fairly ugly human. But as goblins went, Jolene had heard he was considered to be rather handsome by the women of his race. Not that she'd ever seen any here during any of her visits. The floor behind the counter was set high, so Sawyer could loom over his clients, who were usually much taller than he was.
I love you too, Sawyer, Jolene smiled at him.
So what has you in such a snit today? I thought you'd just had a big score last week on some very juicy information.
And just why would I tell a cheap floozy about that?
Jolene laughed.
Oh, please. They hate me just as much as they hate you. You know that. Besides, I just might have some information on all the excitement that's been going on. Maybe we could work out a deal?
Sawyer's eyes narrowed a bit.
And just what would a tramp like you know?
Jolene smiled and played with her hair a moment, then took a slow look around the store while ignoring his jibes.
Well?
Sawyer demanded.
Tramps like me? We get around, Sawyer. You know that. You know those guys who died up in the schoolyard in Sparks?
Yeah, what about them?
They said they were working for you.
Sawyer didn't give much away, but Jolene thought she could detect a slight hint of concern.
They're all dead. Who cares?
Well, the people who killed them, I think. So, Sawyer, just why do you think that they'd finger you in all of this?
Maybe I did a little business with them. What's it to you?
You doing business with humans? Sawyer,
Jolene laughed.
Are you slipping on me?
Money is money. It all spins the same. And it spins even better when I can get it by stirring up mischief with all those stuck-up mages.
Come on, Sawyer. No freebies. I got some hot info for you, but first you gotta tell me what you did.
Just how hot are we talking?
Sawyer was all ears now.
Hot enough to burn you.
Jolene smiled.
Okay, okay,
Sawyer said.
But this had better be good, or you ain't ever walking in here again. You see, there used to be this big mage in town, high-powered alchemy type, but the councils and all, they didn't like him much, said he consorted with the animals too much.
Jolene clearly heard Mark snort from over by the front door at that.
So, word got out that he was working on something that the councils didn't like, and one of them had him rubbed out.
They killed him?
Jolene exclaimed in shock.
Well, they didn't kill him themselves, they're too prissy for that. They hired some guy from Chicago to come out here and deal with it for them.
Jolene nodded.
Okay, but that's all ancient history. What does that have to do with today?
Simple. They didn't kill his wife and kid. Oh, they did a number on them. Put them in the poorhouse.
Sawyer laughed.
I bet that must have been quite a shock for a couple of humans going from rich and pampered to being broken bums. But the kid... The kid's about to turn 21, and a couple of those seer types on the magic councils and in the wizard gangs, they said that the kid is gonna find something from his old man's work, finish what he started, and they either want to stop him or get their hands on it. Take your pick.
And what's your part in this?
I told them how to find the kid, that's all. Wasn't hard, either.
Sawyer laughed.
I just looked them up on the internet. Took me all of 5 minutes, and I got a quarter mil out of those idiots. Some geniuses. They can't even figure out how to use Google. Now, give,
Sawyer said.
What was it his father was making?
Not another word until I hear what you got,
Sawyer growled. Jolene smiled. That kid? He's dating a friend of mine.
Awesome. I can earn another couple hundred thou. I'll even split it with you. What's the address?
Her name is Roxy Channing.
Yeah, okay, that helps. I can use Google if you don't want to rat her out.
Jolene laughed. Sawyer, for a goblin that sells intelligence, you are one damn stupid idiot. Do you know that?
He's a human, Jolene. There's no need to be getting sentimental on me. So he's dating some broad that you know? Call her up and take her out for lunch or something. I'll make sure she's left alone.
Jolene sighed and rolled her eyes. She's Bill Channing's daughter. You know, your friend down in Las Vegas? The sheriff?
Sawyer froze, and his eyes suddenly got very wide.
Did you just say that this kid is dating Sheriff Channing's daughter?
Jolene nodded.
But she's a Lycan, like her dad. And this kid is a human. Lycans and humans don't date. They just don't.
Jolene smiled at him. Actually, it's more like mated at this point. They've kind of moved on past the dating stage.
You telling me that the kid is a Lycan?
Sawyer said, and Jolene could see that he was starting to sweat. Yup.
That ain't cool, boss, Mark said from his seat at the other end of the store.
Screw that,
Sawyer yelled.
We're talking about Tooth and Claw Channing. He threw me out of Vegas just 'cause I mentioned to that Paulson idiot that he had a daughter. If he finds out I'm involved in...
Sawyer looked at Jolene.
Please, Jolene, honey, tell me that he doesn't know, that you're the only one.
Sorry, Sawyer. That guy who ratted you out before he died?
Uh-oh,
Sawyer said, and swallowed. Yeah, Roxy killed him.
Marks, get up off your ass! Bar the door! We're going on a vacation! Now!
Jolene almost laughed as Sawyer started to gather up a bunch of things and started to throw them into a suitcase that he'd pulled out from under the counter.
Thanks for the info, kid. I gotta run. The back door's through there,
Sawyer said, jerking his thumb over his shoulder. So, just what is this work that the kid is supposed to do?
I ain't got time for that now. I gotta run.
Jolene laughed as Sawyer closed the suitcase and, grabbing a hat, stuck it on his head.
Oh, right. Laugh it up. Rub some salt into the wounds, why don't you?
Sawyer, did you hear me say that she's a friend?
Yeah, so?
Sawyer said, heading for the back door. Marks was already there, and he had a much larger suitcase in hand. She's a very close friend. Very close.
What are you telling me?
Sawyer stopped and turned, eyeing her warily. I could talk to her. Tell her that you didn't know. Get her to tell her father to back down and leave you alone. Perhaps.
You'd do that for me? Why?
Sawyer asked, looking suspicious. 'Cause you're probably the only person in town those sanctimonious bastards hate more than me. Jolene laughed.
And that's the only reason?
Well, now that you mention it, there are a few questions you could answer.
I don't know what they're afraid of. I don't know what his old man was working on. Whatever it is, it's something that they've been keeping secret for a long time now. It had something to do with the Lycans.
What? Something bad?
Hardly. That guy loved Lycans. Had several of them working for him. Word was, his best friend was a Lionware. No, something that was going to help get the human mages and wizards' foot off of their necks. Change the status quo.
And you were helping them stop this, boss?
Marks growled and looked down at Sawyer, who rolled his eyes.
Look, I don't believe that the kid has squat or will do squat. I thought he was just another human kid doing human things. If they'd had something like that, they would have sold it off years ago. It's a myth, okay?
What if it's not a myth?
Marks growled. Jolene held up her hand, interrupting the budding argument. Do you know who's after him? Jolene asked Sawyer.
Everybody. Every magic user's council, good and bad. Their criminal gangs. All of them. We're damn well near all. They either want to get it for themselves to gain more power over the Lycans, get it to stop it from ever getting out, or they just want to stop him. And a lot of the groups out there aren't picky over how they stop him either. They killed his father, right? So why would they worry about killing his kid?
Boss, Mark started, but Sawyer did a sudden double take and held up his hand.
Wait a moment. You said this kid is a Lycan now, right?
Jolene nodded.
And if they're worried about him, that means he's a magic user?
Jolene shrugged.
It's a possibility. Why?
A Lycan magic user? Are you kidding?
Sawyer howled with laughter.
Oh, man! Would that ever get their panties in a bunch? Tell you what, Jolene, if this kid does come up with something, bring him here and I'll make sure every damn Lycan in the state gets whatever the hell it is.
For a price, of course, Jolene said wryly.
Hell yeah! Of course for a price. I'm not doing charity work here. But don't worry. Marks here will probably kill me if I try to rip anybody off.
Jolene looked at Marks, who nodded.
When it comes to family, I keep him reasonably honest.
Jolene nodded.
Okay, then.
Sawyer smiled.
Sure, hon. Anything. Just as long as you get Sheriff Channing off my ass.
You learn anything, you let me know, okay?
Sawyer smiled and actually looked happy.
Jolene, darling, you keep that crazed cheetah from killing me and it's a deal.
Jolene smiled and stuck out her hand, which Sawyer quickly shook.
Have a nice day, gentlemen.
Jolene smiled and, turning, started walking slowly back towards the front door as she pulled out her cell phone and called Roxy.
Yes, Jolene?
Roxy answered.
Could you do me a favor, hon? Sure, what? Could you call your father and tell him to leave Sawyer alone? And just why would I want to do that? Because he's being more than helpful. In fact, you might even say he's on our side. Oh, I gotta go then.
And Roxy hung up. Stopping at the barred door, Jolene looked back at Marks, who looked at Sawyer, who nodded at him. Walking down to the front door, he unbarred it and opened it, and then jumped back a good 10 feet. There was a werecheetah in the doorway, a very large and well-armed one, with a cell phone to his ear.
If that's what you want, honey, fine. I won't bother him at all.
Why, Sheriff Channing, so nice to see you again.
Jolene smiled.
Could you give me a ride home, perhaps?
Sawyer watched wide-eyed from the back of his shop, hiding behind the counter.
Why, I'd be delighted to, Jolene.
Marks closed the door behind Jolene as she walked off with the sheriff and turned to look at his boss, who was panting behind the counter and wiping his brow.
Next time, boss, maybe you should do more than just Google it.
Oh, shut up and watch the door.
Tuesday at school. Sean was on pins and needles all day at school. Tuesday was his heavy day, with the most classes. He was constantly on the lookout, to the point where he was having a hard time following just what his teachers were going over. "Something the matter, Sean?" Professor Cruz asked him as he left his last class of the day. Sean sighed.
"My mother's house was robbed, and now she's missing, and her next-door neighbor, a close family friend, was found shot dead. Oh, and my girlfriend's father, who's a sheriff, thinks I should drop out and lie low until the police figure out just what the hell is going on."
Sean looked at the shocked expression on his professor's face.
"You're not kidding, are you?"
Professor Cruz asked. Sean shook his head.
"I wish I was."
"I think you should take his advice. You obviously feel in danger."
"But there's only a few weeks in the semester until finals."
5 is not a few, Sean.
"One of those is spring break," Sean pointed out.
"What are you taking this semester?" Sean ran down the list. He had 4 computer science major courses, 2 social science electives, and a history course. "Drop the history course and the social sciences. You can do those anytime. All of us in the comp sci department post our lecture notes after each class. You've been doing well enough that I'll let you take the final online. I'll talk to your other instructors. Do you have a detective I can call to verify your story?"
Sean dug out Detective Schumer's card and gave it to him. "Do you think they'll let me do it?"
"If you've been carrying a good average in class, I don't see why not."
Sean nodded and suddenly felt a lot better about things. "Thanks, Professor. I appreciate the help.
Hey, you're not the first student to come through here who is having problems like these. This may not be Vegas, but with all the gambling, Reno gets its own share of gang problems.
Well, thanks anyway, Sean said, and after checking his phone for messages, he left, heading home for the day. He was attacked 10 feet outside of the building. Sean was down on his knees before he'd even realized what was happening, having been hit in the back of the head with a club. The only reason he was even conscious was because of his new lichen stamina. He fell forward and tried to start crawling away as people started yelling when he suddenly felt paralyzed. Some sort of force was holding him still, not allowing him to move. He almost shifted, but there were people screaming and yelling and running around, so the last thing he wanted to do was become the target in all of the confusion, which a huge lion would definitely be. Instead, he closed his eyes and let his body collapse to the ground and started listening. He could hear people yelling to call an ambulance and to catch that guy, so his best guess was that other students were getting involved.
I'm a doctor. Let me through, someone called,
and Sean sighed. Hopefully, by the time the police and an ambulance showed up, whatever this effect was that was paralyzing him would wear off. He heard a siren then, surprised at how quickly they had gotten there. But then, there had been an increased police presence on the school grounds again today, so they must have just had one in the area.
Out of the way! Coming through!
Someone was calling. He felt them roll him onto his back, and then a couple of people picked him up and put him on a stretcher.
Hey! Aren't you going to use a backboard?
Someone in the crowd yelled.
It's a head injury, the doctor said,
and Sean felt the straps across his body and his legs tighten down then, and suddenly they were rolling off. He felt the jolt when they put him in the back of the ambulance and heard the doors close. A moment later, he heard the front door close and the ambulance's engine start up and the ambulance start to move off.
We clear? The doctor asked.
Yeah, we're clear. They bought it, said a second voice.
Did our guy get away?
Scott? Yeah. He took off after he hit him. By the time anyone realized what was going on, he had a big head start.
Now what?
Asked a third voice.
Now we take him back and let the experts take him apart. That's what, the second voice said.
Can I drop the paralysis spell? The doctor asked. It's pretty tiring.
Yeah, these straps are pretty tight. Even if he comes to, he's not getting out of that.
Sean felt the spell release him. Opening his eyes, he looked around. There were three of them, all right. None of them had guns out. Only one appeared to have any kind of suspicious bulge.
Ah, awake, I see. You've been giving us a hard time, Mr. Valens. You've been giving us a very hard time.
Sean identified him as the second voice. He was the one with the gun. The doctor was sitting by his head. The third person was sitting down by his feet. Sean was being held down to the stretcher by two straps, which he guessed was locked into place. The three men were sitting on a bench seat on the other side of the vehicle from him, about 2 feet away, probably where real paramedics would have sat. And it was a real ambulance. He could see all of the gear was in it, the oxygen regulators, everything. He wondered where they had stolen it from.
"If you let me go now, I won't kill all of you," Sean said, embracing his lion.
He had no doubt after hearing that "take him apart" line that whatever they had planned for him, he wasn't going to like it.
"You are hardly in a position to talk."
"Sure," Sean growled and started looking at his options. "So are you with the lithos, the vestibule, whatever the hell, or are you a new player in this party?"
The man laughed.
"I gather the lithos have gone home to lick their wounds. Showing up at the mall was really a bad idea. We're with the Council of Gradatim."
"More Latin, right?" Sean said and tested his bonds.
"Don't bother. You're not going anywhere, Mr. Valens."
"You know, my father left me nothing, right? And that we were stripped of everything we had?"
"That may be, but we will still make sure. Don't worry. It'll be painless, I promise."
"I won't be," Sean growled. And embracing his lion, he let the rage he was feeling fill him as he shifted.
It felt different. He wasn't in the back seat this time. He was front and center, but so was his lion. There wasn't any separation between the two of them, and it felt right.
He sat up as the belt around his chest snapped, and reaching down with a large fur-covered hand, he sliced the belt over his legs with a finger. Rolling onto his left side, he kicked out his right leg with his claws out and, effortless, disemboweled the one sitting at the back as he struck the man who had been talking with his right fist. The man grunted, but apparently he was wearing body armor of some sort, because Sean's hand didn't go through his chest. Meanwhile, the doctor at the head of the bench shrieked like a little girl, and then started beating on the partition door to the front. The man he'd hit was fumbling with his gun as Sean growled and pulled himself closer to the man.
"Use your paralysis spell, you asshole!"
the man yelled, and started to chant something as well, as Sean opened his mouth wide and roared in the man's face as he grabbed for the man's hand. Sean missed. His body was definitely a lot bigger now, and he misjudged the grab, but they were nose to nose now. So, opening his mouth, he took the man's head in between his jaws and bit down. Hard. Hot blood and a foul taste filled his muzzle as the man's body jerked and the gun went off. Sean didn't feel any pain, so obviously he'd been missed. Spitting out the crushed remains of the man's head, he turned and faced the doctor, who was gibbering in fear now.
"Don't kill me, don't kill me, don't kill me!"
"Where's my mother?" Sean growled.
"Don't kill me, don't kill me, please don't kill me!"
Lashing out, Sean punched him in the throat, crushing it. He'd been aiming for the mouth to shut the man up. He was definitely going to have to spend some time in this new form to get a better feeling for this new body. The man fell to the floor, choking. Sean looked around for the gun. He figured that guy was as good as dead anyways. He found the gun in the other man's grip and quickly pried it out. It wasn't going to fit his new hand, but he couldn't stay like this much longer. He had to get out of the ambulance, and a huge lion man would be noticed. Shifting back was a moment's thought. Then, picking up the gun, he turned and looked at the partition door. Sliding forward to it, he opened it.
"What the hell are you doing to that kid back?"
the driver said, and turned to look at Sean, his eyes widening in surprise just as Sean shot him in the head. The ambulance suddenly took off as the dying spasms of the man pushed the accelerator to the floor, and then it started to rock side to side, throwing Sean, the dead bodies, and any gear that wasn't strapped down all over the back of the ambulance. After a few moments, it must have hit something, because there was a loud noise, and suddenly it rolled over onto its side and went sliding along the ground. Everything inside falling to the left side of the ambulance as the sounds of scraping and tearing metal filled the insides. Sean flew forward and hit the front bulkhead, when quite suddenly, and with a very loud bang, the ambulance came to an abrupt stop. Hitting his head, he groaned in pain as several portable oxygen bottles slammed into him, breaking his arm as well as several ribs. It took him a moment to gather his wits. There was a piece of metal trim sticking into his leg. Grabbing that with his good arm, he pulled it out and looked around for an escape route. The side door was up above him now. Getting to his feet, he tried to avoid getting any blood on him. As he reached up with his good arm and unlatching the door, he pushed it open. That was when he heard it. A hissing noise. No, actually it was more like a whistling noise. Like a bomb. Reaching up with both hands, Sean grabbed the door and hauled himself out onto the top of the turned-over ambulance. Amazingly, his arm seemed fine now, and the hole in his leg from the trim was gone. Even his head felt fine. They were off the road a ways now, and suddenly he heard the sound of a fire igniting as the hissing noise got louder. He knew that oxygen didn't explode, but gasoline sure did, and if this thing was going to burn, he wanted to get as far away as he could. Jumping off the ambulance, he turned and ran away from the road, deeper into the brush and scrub, going just as fast as he could. He'd lost his shoes, they'd come off when he'd shifted. Surprisingly, his pants and shirt were fine, other than being covered in blood and gore, of course. But that could wait. The first thing was to get away. There were already people running down from the road to investigate, and some of them looked like they had fire extinguishers. Also, the sounds of sirens were starting up in the distance. Sean shook his head. Sirens seemed to be the theme song of his life these days. Eventually, he figured out just where he was, and remembering that there was a lake in San Rafael Park, he started to run that way. By the time he'd gotten to it, just about everything had dried on him, but he didn't care. Right now he wanted it all off. So taking out his phone and setting it down with his wallet, he dove into the water. It was so cold that he nearly screamed. He was surprised he didn't have a heart attack. Then again, maybe he had and his lion had healed it. His lichen-ness had sure dealt with the other injuries he'd gotten quickly enough. Surfacing, he started to tread water as he worked all the dried blood and gunk out of his hair. Going under the surface a few times, he finally got it all out, when he realized he had another problem. There were people waving and yelling at him from the far side of the lake, some of which were now coming around to where he was. Sighing, he swam over to the side and pulled himself back up out of the water, wondering if they thought he was drowning or something. It's not like the water was deep, or even all that fresh, but it still beat the hell out of what he'd been drenched in before. Picking up his phone and wallet, he left the park, heading back to the road. At least now he didn't look like a refugee from a slasher movie. He just looked like a wet, filthy, shoeless bum. At least nobody looked at bums. Looking at his phone, he saw several unanswered calls. He had his phone in silent mode while in class. It didn't even vibrate. He hadn't thought to check it until now, though. The first one he called back was Roxy.
"Sean, are you okay?"
were the first words out of her mouth.
"Well, I am now, though I'm in desperate need of a shower and a change of clothes. Where are you?"
"I'm back at the apartment. Jolene is here, too. We heard about what happened at the school."
"What's Jolene doing there?"
Sean asked, his mood lifting. Hopefully she'd stay the night. He definitely wanted to get his claws into her again tonight, as well as a few other things.
"She learned a few things, and you need to hear them."
"Okay. Has anyone heard about the ambulance crash?"
"That was you?"
Roxy said, surprised.
"Yeah, the attack was a setup to kidnap me using an ambulance. I suspect it was stolen."
"Yeah, it was stolen, all right. They're saying meth heads on the news right now."
"Well, that's good. I'll be there in about an hour. It's a long walk and I'm tired."
"Okay, we'll be here."
"Order me a lot of food, please."
"How much is a lot?"
"Oh, 5 or 6 meat pizzas will probably do it."
"Okay, love. You take care."
Sean smiled. He really liked it when she called him love.
"You too, love," he said, and ended the call.
Next was Detective Schumer.
"Detective, this is Sean Valens."
"Ah, Sean. I just wanted to let you know that we're done processing your mother's house, as well as Mr. Sampson's. So you're free to go back there whenever you want."
Sean nodded to himself and sighed. He'd have to see about going there and, at the very least, cleaning up the mess.
"Thanks, Detective."
"Oh, the casino had your mother's car towed back to the house. It still needs front tires, however."
"What about Sampson's car? They ever find that?"
Sean asked.
"No. We've notified all of the impound lots and scrap yards. It'll turn up eventually. We were contacted by his lawyer, however."
"He had a lawyer?"
Sean was surprised to hear that.
"Yes, and he had a will. You're his sole beneficiary. I gave his lawyer your phone number, so you'll probably hear from him eventually. Anthony Barton is his name."
"Okay. I think I have a call from him to return as well. Thanks, Detective. Any leads on my mom?"
"Sorry, Sean. We don't have any leads on that, but we found the gun that killed Mr. Sampson."
"Really? Where?"
"There was a van that crashed Friday night. You may have heard about it."
"Yeah, I saw it in the paper."
"We recovered the gun from that wreck, so one of the dead guys in it must have been the one to have shot him. We still haven't figured out how their paths crossed, but I suspect once we find his car, we'll know."
"Okay. Thanks, Detective."
"Have a good day, Sean."
Sighing, Sean looked at the third call he had missed. Sure enough, it was the attorney.
"Anthony Barton, attorney at law,"
a man answered the phone.
"This is Sean Valens. You called me?"
"Ah, yes, Mr. Valens. I was the late Mr. Sampson's attorney. As the state has notified me of his death, I'm in the process of executing his last will and testament."
"Okay. And what does that have to do with me, sir?"
"Well, simply put, you are his sole beneficiary."
Sean sighed.
"I knew he didn't have any family. Other than the trailer he lived in next to ours, did he have anything else?"
"Not much, I'm afraid. His car, motorcycle, and whatever was in his house or on his property, I will need you to come by and sign some papers, but that's it.
Okay, I'm a bit busy dealing with a few issues right now. Do you know what's going to be done with his body?
His last wishes were for it to be cremated and the ashes spread in the hills.
Okay.
Sean checked his surroundings. Thankfully, it was just cars going down the road.
Could you text me your address and business hours? I don't know when I'll be able to stop by, but I will try to make it soon.
Of course, Mr. Valens. And you have my condolences. I didn't know Mr. Sampson well, but he seemed to be a nice man.
He was. Thanks.
Sean sighed, and closing his phone, he put it away and turned down a side street, then started cutting across some of the fields. He wondered how long he had until the next attack.
Oh, man, do you stink, Jolene said as he walked into his room. What were you swimming in?
The lake in Raphael Park.
Sean sighed and grabbed his towel.
I think we're gonna have to burn these clothes.
Oh, I'm sure we can clean them up. It's just the crap from the pond there, right?
No, it's blood and guts. I jumped in the pond so I wouldn't look like a mass murderer and get arrested.
How many?
Roxy asked.
4. These guys said they were from the Council of Gradatim. They also said that the Lithos had gone back home to lick their wounds.
Well, go get cleaned up. We'll wait here.
Sean nodded and dragged his butt to the shower and quickly washed himself off. Then, rolling his stinky clothes up, he wrapped the towel around his waist and ducked back into his room. Roxy took the clothes and ran down to the washroom in the basement with a bunch of soap and bleach to see if they could be saved. While he sat at his desk and started in on the first pizza with a will.
So, what did you need to tell me?
He asked Jolene between bites.
Well, first of all, your father didn't die in an accident. He was murdered.
Sean stopped and turned to look at Jolene.
By who?
Some hitman from Chicago.
But he was hired by one of the groups around here.
Sean growled at that. What about all the other stuff that happened to us?
They set that up too. They wanted to be sure that you were never in any position to continue his work.
And just what was his work?
Jolene shrugged. Sawyer didn't know. It was a big secret, but apparently it had something to do with lichens. You see, Sean, lichens are kind of on the low end of the things in the supernatural world. They get a lot of raw deals and are treated pretty poorly by most magic users. Your father was trying to change that.
And for that they killed him? Jolene sighed.
You know how I get power from you?
Sean smiled at her, remembering the other night.
I was sort of hoping to power you up some more tonight.
He smiled.
Yeah, well, there are other ways that magic users can get power from lichens, and those aren't as nice or enjoyable. There are places where lichens live in complete thrall to wizards and mages. Your father was about to upset a very large apple cart. The criminal gangs that abuse lichens didn't want that. Hell, a lot of the very prissy and stuck-up folks in the magical councils and communities here in this country don't want to see lichens in any situation where they can't take advantage of them at will.
Sean sighed.
And they think my dad left me whatever this thing is, and I'm going to use it?
They all believe that something is going to happen when you turn 21, which will either leave you with the results of your father's work, or that you're going to suddenly be able to finish it.
Heh, like that's going to happen. They took everything from us, remember?
The other night you regained something they took from you, Sean. What's to say you won't regain something else on your birthday? These people employ seers, people whose sole duty is to watch out for major events that will affect their fortunes.
And they say I'm going to do this thing?
Sean said, and thought about what she'd just said. His father had planned ahead. He was starting to see that now with the watch. Maybe his dad had employed a seer as well?
Several of them have said this, yes,
Jolene sighed.
And a lot of folks out there believe them, and they're acting on it.
How many?
All of them.
Sean choked on his pizza.
How many is all?
Jolene shrugged.
Hundreds? Thousands? Tens of thousands? I have no idea. There are about a dozen legitimate councils out there, legitimate in that they don't hide from the other councils or societies. They're fairly big and have a lot of power. There are many more illegitimate councils that engage in dark or even evil practices, but no one knows really how many.
because they tend to be small, often made up of only a handful. And then there are the gangs.
Gangs?
As in all things human, you have organized crime gangs. The gangs tend to be made up of a mixture of magic users, normal humans who are wise to things, or who have some minor gift, lycans, goblins, vampires, monsters, whatever.
Sean sighed and hung his head for a moment, until his stomach reminded him he was hungry, and he went back to eating.
Gee, thanks, Dad,
was about all he could think of at that moment. It looked like he had every magic user in the world after his scalp. And he was what, a 20-year-old kid who'd never been outside of Reno, and who had few friends and even fewer allies?
You have me,
his line reminded him,
and Sean had to smile at that. He also had Roxy, and Jolene was definitely helping out.
Then there was Roxy's dad. That would no doubt be worth quite a bit in the long run as well. Roxy rejoined them at that point.
Well, I don't think there'll be a total write-off, but they're definitely going to have some stains. Bile is pretty nasty stuff.
How do you get bile on your clothes? Jolene said, looking at the two of them.
Don't ask, Sean and Roxy said at the same time, causing her to come over and hug him from behind as he started in on the second pizza.
Did you tell him about the Council of Vestibulum yet?
Roxy asked Jolene.
No, I thought I'd leave that to you.
Oh, Sean interrupted. Today's attackers apparently came from the Council of Gradatim, whatever the hell that is. Jolene sighed.
Oh, great. The progressives have gotten involved.
Progressives? Sean asked.
They like to call themselves that. They're not really. They lifted it from some old political group to sound less offensive than they really are. They believe that everyone should give their all to support their vision of the future.
And what vision is that?
One where they rule like kings while the rest of us devote our lives to letting them maintain that lifestyle. All in the name of progress, of course.
Of course, Roxy agreed. Have you dealt with them before?
More than once. Usually they're all talk and not much else. But when they get whipped up over something, well, ethics and morality go right out the window. Not that they really have any. They can be pretty cruel. No doubt they see this as a chance to weaponize their lycans.
Weaponize? Sean asked, looking from Jolene to Roxy. Roxy nodded.
You have to understand, love, that there are lycans under the control of many of the councils. Some because they agree with the leaders, some because of the power they get from it, and many because they have no choice. The council leaders who want this thing, well, they may be thinking that if only they have it and the others don't, then it will give their lycans an advantage over the others, which will allow them to rule over the other councils.
Let me guess, Sean said. Lycans are the foot soldiers and cannon fodder who do all the fighting, while the mages all sit at home safe and secure?
That is the way of it,
Roxy nodded.
Then why am we running into mages out there instead of lycans?
Because if you really do hold the key to lycan freedom, the last thing they want is for any lycan to have control over it. The mages undoubtedly feel that the temptation for a lycan to go rogue is too great to risk.
Yeah, and who would blame them? So what's the story on the vestibulum?
They are the largest of the councils and the most powerful. They have smaller sub-councils in many cities, even here in Reno. They're very conservative, in that they don't like change. They always seek to maintain the status quo.
Well, at least they weren't shooting at me, Sean shrugged and picked up another slice of pizza.
Yet,
Jolene said. Roxy nodded.
What Jolene said. They will usually try to seek solutions that don't require violence, but only because they see violence as being too disruptive. It can stir up too much change for them. But they won't hesitate to kill to further their own ends either. While they're slower to come to that decision, once they've made it, they tend to be all in.
Sean stopped and sat back for a moment, looking down at the second empty pizza box. He'd all but inhaled that one as well. At least now he didn't feel like he was going to pass out at any moment. Turning to face the girls, he smiled.
As I see it, I have three major concerns right now.
And those are?
Roxy asked. One, Sean pointed at Roxy. Two, he pointed at Jolene. And three, staying alive so I can enjoy one and two.
Did you come up with that all by yourself?
Roxy asked, grinning. Right now, it's about all I can think of, Sean said, standing up and stretching as the towel that had been wrapped around his waist fell to the floor. But I'm sure I'll have other ideas before the night is through, he said, leering at the two of them.
You know,
Jolene said, smiling as she started to undo her top.
I kind of like this idea. Roxy?
Oh, I think I'm going to be liking it, too.
Then maybe you'll like this even better. Sean smiled and shifted, reaching out to his lion. They melded once more as he shifted into his hybrid form. Jolene gasped and just stared at him. The look in Roxy's eyes as she quickly stood up, shed her pants, and then shifted into her hybrid form was one of pure lust.
When did this happen, Sean?
Roxy purred as she got up, and pulling off her blouse, she started to run her hands over his strong, short-furred chest.
I really like the mane,
Roxy laughed, and grabbing it, she pulled his head down so they could kiss. Sean rumbled happily.
When dealing with those bastards in the ambulance.
It took him a minute to figure out just how to kiss her. If people thought noses were bad, having a muzzle now made it a lot more difficult. You had to tip your head to the side a lot more.